The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Dr. Smith, today's topic is one that is on every parent's mind, certainly, and pretty much everyone in the community, and that is youth substance use prevention. We all know the dangers and the risks out there with substance use and drugs being very pervasive. And today we have with us a guest who's going to review the data and the trends here in Ulster County, and she is Cheryl DiPaolo. Cheryl is Executive Director of Ulster Prevention Council, which is a division of Family Services. It's part of a multi-sector community coalition dedicated to substance use awareness and prevention education. I'm actually on the board. Ulster Prevention Council runs evidence-based prevention programs in our schools and coordinates the Youth Development Survey, which is an anonymous biannual substance use and trend survey of 7th to 12th graders throughout Ulster County. And it's really an interesting survey. We have now a decade's worth of data. And so we'll be talking about that. So welcome, Cheryl.
Welcome.
How are you?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Cheryl, before we discuss the most recent youth development survey results, let's begin a little with learning a little bit more about Ulster Prevention Council's history, programs, and initiatives, and your background.
Sure. The Ulster Prevention Council started in 2006 as the Ulster Prevention Project, and there was an awareness that substance use rates among youth in Ulster County was amongst the worst in New York State at the time, and there wasn't really an organized effort to address substance abuse. Prevention is really a pretty detailed science at this point, and so being able to look at what really works and implement those evidence-based programs and practices was really important. So over the last 10 years, we've been doing that. We've been building an infrastructure in the county for prevention.
Mm-hmm. And you work primarily in the schools, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Yes, we do an evidence-based curriculum. That means it has research that shows that it works, called Too Good for Drugs. And it's a 10-week curriculum. And it addresses not just the drugs that youth might use, but things like friendship and being true to oneself and respect and things like that, so that students have the skills that they need in order to not get involved in substance use.
Mm-hmm. How are your efforts generally received in the school community in terms of administrators, parents, teachers? Do they appreciate the value of prevention education?
They do. I think that for a while, with all of the testing standards and things, there was kind of we don't have time for this in the classroom. And now with the crisis that we've been going through with substance use, people are starting to recognize that, hey, we need to do this and we need to address at younger ages. And so we started working in kind of middle school range, and now schools are having us in at the elementary school level and starting the process much earlier.
And what's the importance of starting early? What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, the skills really need to be built in very early and then reinforced. And so each year kind of builds on the last one and becomes a little bit more sophisticated in terms of refusal skills and knowledge about different things.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed as we go through the survey.
The survey is indicating exactly the fact that, children are becoming more and more interested and perhaps experimenting at earlier ages than we had initially thought. So, again, for prevention to be most effective, you want to start as early as possible.
Right.
Right. And the data shows that as they climb through the grades from 7th through 12th, the whatever substance it is more prevalent in right. usage. So it is very, very important to get them early, almost across the board. So tell us about the Youth Development Survey. I'm pretty familiar with it, but our listeners are not. How does it, what is it and how does it work? How long has it been in place?
So it's been since 2006 was the first youth development survey. So we have over 10 years of data. And we go into the schools. And this round, we surveyed over 3,900 students in the county. And it takes one class period. It's got a seventh grade reading level so that we're able to, you know, come in and survey. And we want a universal sample, which means we want everyone who's there at that particular time in the school. So we do a really nice random sample that comes up with some really valid results for us.
And that's anonymous, right?
Oh, totally anonymous, right. Yes.
Cheryl,
yes.
What are some of the substances that you're specifically asking questions about?
Well, we ask about, we ask about alcohol and marijuana. And for the first time this year, we asked about marijuana concentrate, hash oil, butane hash oil concentrates. We ask about heroin. We ask about different classes of prescription drugs, painkillers, tranquilizers, cocaine. We ask about bath salts, which is a synthetic drug. And we also asked about psychedelics, inhalants, over-the-counter cough and cold medicines, which can be abused. And for the first time, we asked about energy drinks on this survey because we're very concerned about this trend, which may not seem as serious as some of the other substance abuse problems, but we're finding that kids are using energy drinks at a really high rate.
Mm-hmm. And one of the real fundamental ones, which has been there forever and has been a problem forever, is tobacco use and smoking. And as I was going through the survey, I noticed that an average of over 96% of students in Ulster County, from grades 7 to 12, have not smoked in the past 30 days, and almost as few have never tried smoking. How do you, and you know, we know the effects of smoking, Dr. Smith. We talked about this topic.
Nicotine is one of the most highly addictive drugs we've known.
And as bad as the opioid crisis is, and it produces a lot of overdoses and fatalities, smoking-related diseases, as we know, kill 500,000 Americans.
Right. I think last year, something like 63,000, unfortunately, people died from opioid abuse and overdoses. However, as you said, almost 500,000 people died of consequences and chronic diseases that are directly linked to lifelong smoking.
Mm-hmm. And just as we said earlier, Cheryl, that getting to kids early with education and prevention is really critical, because once they become addicted adult smokers, it's much, much more difficult.
Well,
we did find
out that over 95% of people who are lifelong addicted smokers started before the age of 18. Mm-hmm. So there is that developmental period where the brain is still maturing under the age of 21, where the brain is much more likely to succumb to addictive substances and acquire a lifelong habit with an addiction.
One of the things that we ask on the survey is the perception of harm from different substances. And interestingly, we found that as students got older, they perceived a greater risk of smoking cigarettes than they did when they were younger. And we find the exact opposite of that for marijuana. They're thinking that it's less harmful the older they get. And so the youth are definitely getting the message that cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, which we ask about and is used by some students, our rates are low. And they're actually much lower than the national rates. We always compare our use rates to a national survey called Monitoring the Future, and our rates are significantly lower than those rates.
Right. Well, that's good news. But one thing that's showing up, which is of great concern certainly to us, is the use of alcohol.
Oh, yes.
Could you talk a little bit more about what the survey revealed regarding the alcohol use among our youth?
Yeah, our rates of alcohol use are actually higher than monitoring the future, significantly higher. We ask about lifetime use, so have you ever had alcohol? And nationally, through 7th through 12th graders, about 42% report drinking, where in Ulster County, it's 50.4%, so a significantly higher rate. And then we look at past 30-day use, which is a much better indicator of who's drinking on a regular basis, not just one sip, they tried it, and the national rates are about 20% for last 30-day use. We're here in Ulster County, we've got 26.3%. So a significant concern, and it indicates where we as a council and our prevention efforts really need to be emphasizing the dangers of alcohol consumption amongst youth.
And of course, we're finding out, not only locally, but nationwide, that adolescents are more likely to binge drink, which translates into about 5 drinks for males and 4 drinks at a time for females. So, you know, the binge drinking leads to, a number of issues, safety issues and what have you, with an increased number of motor vehicle accidents, actually more aggressive and violent behavior, homicides, suicides. So all of those things that injury prevention that we want to focus on very often is directly linked to alcohol abuse.
I'm sorry. What has been the traditional education around alcohol use, and what exists now? I mean, what is the most contemporary prevention education look like in that realm?
Right. Well, we can boil it down to a really simple message in terms of alcohol, and we have a campaign out now, a digital campaign, about alcohol damaging the teenage brain, and it changes not just the function of the brain, but the actual structure of the brain. You can see the damage, and so that developmental time period, which goes all the way through adolescence and even up into the early 20s, where alcohol is causing significant and permanent damage to the way the brain functions. And it also, as Dr. Smith said, you know, you have a higher chance of becoming addicted the younger age that the drinking is started. And so there are all kinds of risks for someone who's drinking those binge drinks, you know, on a regular basis. It's really harmful to the brain.
We have a lot more to cover, and this is a really interesting topic, one that we're all concerned about and all have a role in. And we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after these words.
In emergency care, it's all about experience. At Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, it's another way we're investing in you. We're board certified in emergency medicine, nationally recognized in stroke care, and use telemedicine to give patients access to the region's leading specialists. Patients tell us we make their experience exceptional by treating them with the utmost respect. Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, we're advancing care here. Visit hahv.org for more.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Cheryl DiPaolo, who's Executive Director of the Ulster Prevention Council. And we've been discussing the Youth Development Survey that the Ulster Prevention Council conducts every 2 years. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the findings from that survey regarding the youth interest in perhaps use of other substances like marijuana?
Yes, marijuana was really important information to gather because there's so much going on across the country in terms of medical marijuana bills and legalization for recreational use. And so what we're seeing is that our youth are definitely more accepting of use. They don't perceive it as harmful. So where the national standard for the national rate of use for lifetime time was 44.5%, and in Ulster County it's 60%, so significantly higher than the national average. And for past 30-day use, nationally the rate was 33.2%, and here in Ulster it's 51.2%. So our youth are using at higher rates than the national average. And as I talk to them in classrooms and at different events, you know, they're really I think very confused about harmfulness of marijuana. They hear that it's helpful I've even had youth tell me that marijuana can cure cancer. And so addressing those misconceptions that are going on and giving them accurate information becomes very important.
And again, we have to emphasize the age that the substances such as smoking and alcohol and marijuana can affect that developing brain. So, you know, the effect on someone who's into their adult years may not be the same as it is for the younger user. And maybe you can tell us about some of the effects of marijuana on the youthful brain.
Yeah, there are definitely effects. There can be an impact on learning and memory, certainly. It can cause anxiety, and there is a link between schizophrenia and marijuana use in youth. It can cause panic attacks, and so many, many different issues that go along with marijuana use for youth that may not be seen so strongly in adult youth. Also, the respiratory conditions. You know, we know that smoking anything is not good for you, so it's never a good delivery system for any kind of a drug, and so it really leaves our youth open to developing some respiratory illnesses.
And you know, one of the things, Cheryl, that I've always thought a lot about, and I have debates with my friends who are pro-legalization on this topic, which is the aspect of marketing, right?
Yes.
I mean, because there's a difference between decriminalizing, which says, you know, I don't think we should be sending our police out to look for people smoking a joint in their homes, right? That's one thing. It's another thing to fully legalize it and fully commercialize it so that, you know, my 12-year-old daughter, for instance, would be bombarded nonstop by advertising everywhere touting the virtues of, you know, the most potent brand of marijuana, or, you know, how it feels to get high. I don't know that I really want that message going out to my kid.
Yeah, it would be very similar to tobacco advertising decades ago. And there is this thing called big marijuana, just like big tobacco, where there are huge conglomerates who are waiting to come in with their marketing of various products. And they know how to do that very well because they've been doing it in other states.
Yeah, we know that, you know, those companies have not been the most reliable in terms of telling the full truth about their products, you know, and what they can, what harm they can cause. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not doomed, you know, to be using marijuana. Adults use it in many places and they do so responsibly, but kids are another thing. And I think that we have to be very careful in that regard. But moving on to some of the more serious drugs and stronger drugs and ones that have caused an epidemic, which is opioids. And prescription painkillers,
which are potentially immediately life-threatening.
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about that, Cheryl, in Ulster County.
Yes, as far as opiate use, we look at prescription painkillers, and I was really very excited to see our data on this survey in terms of prescription painkiller use, because it seems that our youth are getting the message that that's a dangerous thing to do, and we can see declines over the last several years in use, so that where we were seeing about 6% of students 4 years ago reporting prescription painkiller use without a prescription, somebody else's medication, and we're down from 6% to about 1.6%. And that's a really significant decline. So that's exciting to see. And for heroin use, we've also seen some declines. And we see about 1.2% of students reporting that they've tried heroin and 0.4% reporting heroin in the last 30 days. That's a lot. You know, if you think about children in the classroom, 0.4% is too many of our children
Especially since so often heroin is laced with fentanyl, which is highly, very dangerous. Most of our overdoses right now, when we do our tox screens on the fatalities, do show a mix of fentanyl and heroin and other opiates. So certainly that is one of the added dangers to an already dangerous drug.
And Dr. Smith, tell us a little bit, just give us a quick overview of the opioid pain reliever landscape and what it looks like. Why are they so dangerous and addictive?
Well, still, the opioid issue with respect to overdoses and abuse, when you look at the trends over time, nationwide map, literally it's in every single state. So we're not alone in battling this issue. And also, you know, we're trying to educate prescribers as well that, you know, rather than going to the strongest opiate for pain relief, acute pain relief, try starting with something like ibuprofen or Tylenol even, which very often can adequately control pain. And, you know, the ability or the likelihood of somebody becoming addicted to an opiate varies with the individual. With some folks, it can be as little as just a few doses. Others, maybe a little bit more over time. But certainly the addictive potential of these opiates had been definitely minimized by the pharmaceutical manufacturers over time. And now as a result, we have an issue with so many of our individuals in the community becoming addicted to these substances. So we're trying to, you know, again, educate prescribers. We do have different mechanisms in New York State, such as the iStop program, where an individual prescriber can look up their patient, make sure that, you know, they haven't been abusing the drug and over filling prescriptions
or
doctor shopping, those kinds of things. So we have started to make an impact in that. There, just within the last year or so, there was mandatory education that came down to the New York State Department of Health and the New York State Department of the Bureau of Drug Control, which mandated that all licensed prescribers in New York State partake in a training program to review the multiple dangerous effects of opiates. And so, you know, we're working very actively to remind our prescribers about the issue in the community. But certainly we also have to look at it from multiple perspectives, including what's going on with illegal use or illegal acquisition of these drugs, how often the substances that are on the street, be it a prescription pain pill or a heroin, is laced with very, very dangerous fentanyl, which is 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine, and can certainly lead to a fatality within a single dose. So, you know, we're looking at it from many perspectives. We're actively trying to work on the problem, and hopefully we'll show some positive effects in our quest to control this epidemic.
And Cheryl, it's even more dangerous with kids, is it not? I mean, in terms of, you know, they're developing brains, their body weight, and the fact that, you know, that these things might be available in grandma's or medicine cabinet or the parents' medicine cabinet where there is an excess of these highly addictive painkillers and they're sitting there.
Yes, one of our biggest initiatives has been a campaign to ask people to lock up their medication that they do have, to keep it in a locked box so that it's not open to being abused by someone else or accidentally ingested by a child. And also to get rid of unused medication, to get it out of the house. And we do have prescription drop boxes in every law enforcement station in the county where you can take those excess medications and drop them in the box. We particularly find that when with seniors or when someone passes, that there are just large numbers of these very strong medications that could be abused or used by a child that need to leave the house as soon as possible.
And a reminder to our listeners that, you know, over 50% of the highly addictive drugs on our streets come from our own medicine cabinet. So if you have unused medications sitting in your medicine cabinet, dispose of them properly and responsibly. We have a list on our websites at ulsterhelps.org, a full list of where you can dispose of them anonymously, no questions asked. You just go and get them off of our streets and help us in this cause. So Cheryl, what can parents do? What role do parents, families have in mitigating these issues and helping their kids navigate these waters?
Well, one thing that we know is that the most important impact on a child is the parental attitude towards substance abuse. Do they talk about it? Less than half of our students reported that their parents had a conversation with them around alcohol and drug use, making it clear that that they disapprove of use, and really being, you know, aware of what's going on, knowing where their children are, and checking in with them on a regular basis.
And also pro-social involvement, like,
absolutely,
like getting involved in music, art, theater, sports, engagement, right, to keep them from getting into trouble.
Right.
So that's about all the time we have for now. This is a really great topic, and I wish we had more time, but that's about it.
We'll have Cheryl back, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for the work you do. And you're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and your community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.